The body appeared on Joe Pickett's woodpile one crisp Wyoming morning, bloody, frozen, and clutching a cooler filled with mysterious animal droppings. This wasn't just any corpse. It was Ote Keeley, the same outfitter who had humiliated Joe months earlier by taking his service weapon during a confrontation over poached deer. As a game warden in the rugged terrain of 12 Sleep County, Joe had faced hostility before, but never had violence followed him home like this. The bloodstains on his walkway would remain for months to come, a constant reminder that the barrier between professional danger and family safety had been irreparably breached. Joe's daughter Sheridan had awakened screaming about a monster in their yard the night before, an eerie premonition that blurred the line between childhood fears and real threats. For Joe, the violation cut deep. Ote Keeley had violated their sanctuary. His modest state-owned house, already struggling to contain his growing family, no longer felt safe. This wasn't supposed to happen to a by-the-book game warden who simply enforced wildlife laws. But in the vast Wyoming wilderness, where economic interests, environmental concerns, and frontier justice collided, playing by the rules had made Joe Pickett a target. In a profession where looking the other way often leads to success, Joe Pickett stands apart with unwavering moral clarity. Unlike colleagues who navigate gray areas, Joe enforces wildlife laws strictly, even when it costs him professionally. His arrest of the governor for fishing without a license has made him a department pariah, viewed as naive by fellow wardens and as an obstacle by hunters. Financial struggles highlight Joe's principled nature. Living in a modest state-owned house with his wife Mary Beth and daughters, he barely survives on a game warden's salary. Their credit card is nearly maxed out, and Joe feels he's failing to provide for his college-educated wife. Yet he refuses to compromise, even as his former mentor, Vern Dunnigan, triples his income in the private sector. What makes Joe compelling isn't blind idealism, but conscious choice. His declaration to Mary Beth, "I'm not cut out for playing politics, schmoozing," is an assertion of identity. Like the wilderness he protects, Joe's principles remain unchanged by human pressures, making him both hero and outsider in Wyoming. At the heart of the escalating violence lies an unlikely catalyst, the Miller's weasel, a rare endangered species. When Joe discovers a killing field with 26 mounds containing blocked holes, spent casings, and illegal poisons, he uncovers their systematic extermination. But why target such an obscure animal? The answer connects environmental law and economic development. An endangered species habitat would trigger federal protection, halting InterWest Resources' planned billion-dollar pipeline. As Vern tells Joe, when billions of dollars are at stake, people will do things they wouldn't normally do. This conflict avoids portraying either environmentalists or developers as villains. Instead, it presents a clash of legitimate values, conservation versus economic survival, corrupted when pursued illegally. The weasel killings represent a calculated attempt to remove an obstacle before federal documentation. The weasels serve as the perfect MacGuffin, valuable enough to kill for, yet easily overlooked. Their presence transforms the landscape into contested ground, where competing visions for Wyoming's future battle for dominance. Joe's investigation reveals the corruption of those sworn to protect. Wacy Hedeman, his friendly colleague, emerges as a conspirator. Sheridan witnesses him shooting her mother, a profound violation of trust from within Joe's own system. More devastating is Vern Dunnigan's role as mastermind. Joe's former mentor transforms from role model to villain, using insider knowledge to orchestrate environmental destruction and murder. Vern justifies his actions by claiming to understand the real world, where nice things don't necessarily happen to nice people, revealing how principles erode when self-interest dominates. The corruption extends systemically. Sheriff Barnum focuses on re-election rather than thorough investigation, while the Game and Fish Department readily scapegoats Joe to protect itself. What makes this exploration effective is its realism. Wasey and Vern haven't embraced evil, but succumbed to common temptations: money, power, recognition. Their corruption stems from moral compromise rather than inherent wickedness, making it more disturbing and believable. Violence strikes the Pickett home when Mary Beth, pregnant with their son, is shot by Wasey, attempting to silence Joe's investigation. Joe's breakdown after learning his unborn son has died reveals the raw humanity beneath his stoic exterior. Mary Beth becomes the family's emotional anchor amid crisis. When Joe faces professional disgrace, she demonstrates true strength. All is not lost. You have me. You have your family. You have character. This reveals that security comes from bonds of loyalty and love, not physical barriers. Sheridan, Joe's oldest daughter, shows remarkable courage by escaping into the mountains after witnessing the shooting, enduring cold and hunger rather than risk capture. By the novel's end, the Picketts adopt April Keeley, Oates' orphan daughter, embodying the novel's message that family is defined by choice and commitment, not blood. Despite their ordeal, they emerge closer rather than bitter, their bonds proven strong enough to withstand severe tests. The climactic confrontation between Joe and the conspirators raises profound questions about justice. Rather than killing Wasey, though legally justified as self-defense, Joe shoots to wound, telling him, "I didn't kill you because I want you to live with what you've done." This choice reflects Joe's desire for Wasey to face moral consequences rather than escape through death. The epilogue reveals mixed outcomes. Vern becomes a media commentator on the Endangered Species Act, while Wasey remains free but socially ostracized as the lone arm of the law. These outcomes suggest public reputation and personal conscience often deliver more meaningful justice than courts. Joe's secret relocation of Miller's weasels represents his moral calculation that both wildlife and the local economy deserve protection. By finding a middle path between preservation and development, Joe delivers justice that rigid legal frameworks cannot. True justice requires moral judgment rather than mere rule following. In the complex intersection of conservation, economic interests, and individual rights, just solutions often lie outside formal legal structures. As Wyoming spring arrives, what Joe calls a cruel joke, where heavy snow can still kill emerging life signs of renewal, appear despite harsh conditions. The weasel named Elway has produced 10 kits, 8 of which survived, demonstrating nature's persistence after attempted extermination. The Pickett family shows similar resilience. Mary Beth progresses from wheelchair to assisted walking, determined to recover. Their once violated home becomes a sanctuary again, now including April Keeley, forming new family bonds from tragedy. The community faces complex consequences. Designating approximately 80 square miles as protected habitat has cost 400 local jobs, reflecting difficult trade-offs between environmental protection and human livelihoods. Joe's reflections on projecting human qualities onto animals, while sometimes valuing them over people, highlights the challenge of balancing obligations to nature and humanity. His illegal relocation of the weasels represents his personal attempt at this balance. The image of Joe and Sheridan planning to visit the transplanted weasels offers hope, father and daughter still finding wonder in nature despite their ordeal.